Ready, we're going to start off the first record here. Let's see now. Wait a minute here. We're going to play the first record for, for Demi, for Perry, for JB, for Bernice, for Vera, and for Beulah, for Effie, for Oliver, for Santa May. We're going to play it for Bulldog. And the title is, we're going to Flat Dig the Boogie by Piano Red. Let's go.
Well, I'm sitting here one fat spot over my clothes. A box holds my clothes. I ain't got no matches, but I got a long way to go. I'm an old poor boy, long way from home. I'm an old poor boy, long way from home. Guess I'll never be happy. Everything I do is wrong. Till your big dog come. Let me be your little dog. Till your big dog come. When the big dog gets here, show him what this little puppy done. Well, I'm sitting here with a matchbox, hold my clothes. Yeah, I'm sitting here with a matchbox, hold my clothes. I ain't got no matches, got a long way to go. Let it go, boy. Go, go. Well, I'm sitting here wanting a matchbox hold close. Baby, I'm sitting here wanting.
Welcome to show 52, BigFoamyHead.com, the Bayhawk Brewery Show, and that was a little different opening that we just had. We had our special dead guest announcer, Dewey Phillips, and Dewey was a famous disc jockey back in the early 50s who would play pretty much anything he felt like, got into a lot of trouble, lived a horrible existence, drunk off his ass most of the time, and died like everybody else who is big into rock and roll.
Well, let's have a drink to Dewey.
There you go. Here's to Dewey.
Cheers.
Okay, there we go. And we are toasting Dewey with
Bayhawk Ales. It's right now we're drinking the Honey Blonde. Bayhawk Ales, Orange County's largest microbrewery, began operation late 1994 with our first beer being poured February 95. Public corporation with 1,300 stockholders.
And it's good stuff. And this and these guys, where we know them from is...
The Pilsner Room, which is near where my home office is in Irvine, California.
Right.
The McCormick and Schmick's is the restaurant they're roughly associated with.
Yeah, affiliated with, right.
So you have McCormick and Schmick's has the Pilsner Room. Bayhawk Ales is attached to that, and their office is basically outside the door of the Pilsner Room.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and when we were there, happened coincidentally on different business trips, but in the exact same spot,
almost a year ago, December.
Yep, we missed them, but you went back, and they were closed when we were there, but you managed to.
Well, I had been hanging out at the Pilsner Room as a, you know, just a place where I would go in the evening for my meals and whatever. And one night, it was Wednesday, I believe, it was karaoke night. So everybody's in there, the big crowd. It's the only night that this place was crowded that week. And I was getting a little bored, you know.
Yeah. You did got up, did a few numbers. And
yeah, I did my, you know, my old crooning songs and all that.
Did you do your Patsy
that,
Cline and, tribute?
No, I did not do
okay.
that one.
You
that,
were saving, that saving it?
That would have blown away. They were not worthy of the Patsy Cline tribute.
Okay.
So anyway, singing my little heart out and got a little bored with that. And then went upstairs, and the way the windows worked, they had all the blinds closed or the draperies closed and for the brew house. I noticed there's somebody in there. First time I'd ever seen anybody in a brewery. 10:30 at night, I'd had a beverage or two, probably. And
so you started banging on the door?
Yeah. Seriously. I literally knocked on the door and stuck my head in and go, hey, I'm a homebrewer. Can I come watch you brew?
Yeah.
So it was fun. And he kind of gave me a brewery tour. Okay. It was Chris Wright. And I don't recommend everybody in the world go knock on the door and try and barge in. But I was fortunate that night. And he was quite the gracious host. And he showed me around, you know.
So it's a pretty nice setup.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a 10,000 barrel system.
That's
no,
not,
wait. It's a 15 barrel brew house.
Yeah.
10,000 barrels per year. Yeah. So.
Okay. So there, that's a nice little size. It's well under the capacity for a microbrew, right?
Their tagline is Bayhawk specializes in brewing house beers for many fine restaurants and taverns throughout California, Arizona, Nevada, Hawaii, Texas, and Colorado.
Hmm.
We just might be the greatest beer you never knew you drank.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is very good. This is the Honey Wise.
Honey Blonde.
Honey Bond. Okay.
And it's a straw-colored, light body.
It's got a sweet taste. You can taste the honey.
Light with a hint of honey is the taste.
Yeah.
Original gravity, 1050. Alcohol by content. Alcohol content. Oh, that must be alcohol by volume. 4.6.
Okay, so you can drink a lot of this.
You can drink a lot of it. It's
and we're eating jalapeno chips, and it's bouncing back and forth between hot and spicy and sweet beer. So good stuff. I'm enjoying it.
Yes, very much.
Poured pretty good. Not too bad ahead. You've got you swirled yours a little to get the head up, and a nice white head.
Mm-hmm. We both got a little bit of a metallic taste when we first tasted it because we were eating jalapeno chips.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of...
No, we did it. We did it to ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to point out, we talked about Dewey Phillips opening the show, but what he was doing was introducing a song. I mean, actually, I played a different song, but that was Carl Perkins that was singing a Blind Lemon Jefferson blues song called Matchbox. So that was a rockabilly take on a blues song. And Carl Perkins, I think he's probably one of the least famous of the Sun people. Or, you know, everybody knows Elvis, Johnny Cash. I guess a lot of people, they know Roy Orbison, but they may not know he was a Sun recording studios artist. And Sun Records is here in Memphis, Tennessee. It was famous for being where all the good rockabilly came from. And this is where music had a turning point in the 50s.
Sam Phillips was start off with doing some blues and some gospel.
Yes.
And he was bringing the black artists in for a while, and then rockabilly took off.
Yeah, and that was sort of, he kind of helped create that genre with Elvis coming in, singing his stuff, putting his own twist on it and so forth. And we were reading a little background, but Carl Perkins, what he was known for, or at least recognized for, was he was the original author of Blue Suede Shoes. And I don't know how many people actually know that, but there it is. And I was telling you about the story of Carl. The way he got into Sun Studios was he heard Elvis on the radio. And Carl was out of Jackson, Tennessee, which is about 75 miles from where we're sitting.
It's right a good hour drive from here, yeah.
Yeah. And so Carl, apparently there was a big nightclub circuit for country and hillbilly and rockabilly acts on Jackson, Tennessee. You either made it or they ran you out of town. So you had to really be sure of yourself, and Carl was, and he heard Elvis on the radio and thought, finally, here's a guy who sings the kind of music I like. And he found out it was at Sun Studios here in Memphis, so he drove down. 1954, walked into the studios, auditioned for Mr. Phillips, got a gig. And then things weren't really going. Sam Phillips didn't want to, you know, because Elvis was hot, didn't want to put Carl up against Elvis.
He thought you don't want to compete against yourself.
Don't want to compete.
Not on the same label.
So Carl had to be content with singing hillbilly country type songs. But in the meantime.
Well, that's how I know Carl Perkins as a country and western singer.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And Carl, in the meantime, was just kind of biding his time. And in December of 19, I can't find it now, but I believe it was 55, Sam Phillips sold Elvis's contract. to RCA. And so
a particularly dumb move.
Yeah, really blindingly stupid move in hindsight. But we were looking at Carl. Now it's like, okay, now here's his chance. And his label mate, Johnny Cash, encouraged him to go tell Sam about this new song that he'd wrote called Blue Suede Shoes. He recorded it, worked great for him. So he heads out. He's going to go and promote it nationally. It done well on the charts. And they're off to New York City. And on the way, he and his brother and the other guy in the band rear-ended a chicken truck. And it was a terrible wreck. They went to the hospital. Carl had a fractured skull. His brother had a broken neck. And as they are laying in traction in the hospital, they see Elvis on the Dorsey Brothers show singing his new hit, Blue Suede Shoes. And it says in here, snatching his moment of fame away from him.
Wow.
Can you imagine laid up in the hospital not watching this guy? Screw you.
I can't imagine anyone else doing Blue Suede Shoes other than Elvis, though.
I know.
But I mean, that was his song. That's his trademark.
But it wasn't, though. That's the thing, though. Elvis, hell, he already had an original song. You know, Hound Dog was Big Mama Thorne. It was a blues song. I mean, if you listen to it, it's got the repetitive verses. Mm-hmm. Same thing as like this one. It's all blues songs, and so just rocked up a little bit. So we're kind of looking at music.
I like the movies that they show where they were out promoting the old songs. The old music industry, yeah. You know, like That Thing You Do. And La Bamba and all those movies that kind of chronicle what it was like in the old days.
Yeah, you had
hitting
the
road.
You had to get in a car and hit the road, exactly.
Talking to DJs and trying to get your record on the air, you know?
And of course, you know, today, and of course, I relate everything to the rap music scene.
yes, you do.
That's still the way it's done. You've got street teams promoting stuff, and you get you have to go and circulate your own homegrown rap around and hope somebody pays attention to you. So,
yeah, I saw the movie It's Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
There you go.
What's the name of the movie? That's it, right?
Hustle and Flow.
Hustle and Flow, yeah.
Yeah.
Where she got the record on the station.
That's right. That's good stuff. Well, so anyway, we're going to be hearing more Sun artists later on, and got more beer to drink. And what else we got coming up?
This beer is going very smooth, actually.
It is.
The more I drink of it, the better it's tasting.
We got three more, right?
Two more
from Bayhawk. And so I tell you what, I got another Sun artist I want to put on. And this is, we mentioned him earlier, Johnny Cash. Now, we were raving about Johnny Cash months ago when we saw Walk the Line, mm-hmm. right? Johnny Cash, and this is Memphis, you know, all Memphis, all Sun Studios. He recorded here, and we were talking about he started in gospel. He got into rockabilly and stuff like that. And so this is a song that he wrote while he was in the service before he even had a recording.
According to the movie, he walked into Sam Phillips trying to sing gospel.
Right.
And Sam said, what do you really got? You know?
Yeah.
Give me something else. And this is the song he played, according to the movie.
Yeah. Well, in real life, it was like his fourth release. But he did. Sing.
Yeah, but to get Sam Phillips' attention.
Oh yeah,
this
was
the song he played.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, all right, Folsom Prison Blues.
I hear the train a coming. It's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. that there's rich folks eating in a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. That railroad train was mine. I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line, far from Folsom Prison. That's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
All right, so that was Johnny Cash. And during the break, we broke open the Hawk Ales Amber Ale.
And, good stuff.
It's a deep amber color, medium body, subtle spiciness, moderately hopped smooth finish, a 1054 original gravity, alcohol is 4.5, 23 IBUs.
Yeah, color. I mean, it's good. It sort of reminds me, I guess I've had enough amber ales in the past that, whereas that doesn't really seem to be kind of a, you know, a real clearly delineated type.
Yeah.
Although it probably is somewhere. You know, you get an amber ale, God knows what you're getting. This is, I guess I'm getting what I thought at first was mustiness, but it's the hops. That it's not as much.
Well, it's got Pearl, sweetness. Liberty, and Cascade in it.
Okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It actually reminds me of the Old Town Brewery amber ale that I've had, and a couple of other amber ales. So I don't know if it's, you'd say, like a little biscuity or musty sort of malt taste.
I actually had an interesting discussion with a bartender, not this time, but last time. Mm-hmm. We were there, and he was saying that the California audience, it's real hard to get the average person to drink anything much more flavorful than a Budweiser. So, yeah. You know, you get a lot of these Bayhawk ales. They brew a beach blonde, you know, and an amber ale, and a honey blonde.
So they're kind of light and sweet.
And a Hefeweizen. These guys have a wonderful Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
That you get on tap. And that's kind of to satisfy that Southern California audience. And, you know, if you read the areas where they're distributed, it's mostly in the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hotter environment. You know, people want more refreshing, lighter beers. So.
Okay. Well, I can buy that. So maybe their darker ones or more robust ones they don't quite.
Well, I'll guarantee the next beer we have is
an exceptional
one. It's
you've been
one
waiting
of my favorites.
On it. You've been waiting on it. So it's getting that time of year, Halloween.
Yeah. We had our neighborhood Halloween party. My wife was out of town, so unfortunately I went stag. But
and I was out of town, so I didn't have to worry about it.
But I had the joy of coming up with a costume. So I had it in my brain that I was going to get a pair of lederhosen. And I don't know if you've tried. It's exceptionally hard to find lederhosen in Memphis, Tennessee. Yeah,
I would think that might be true everywhere except Wisconsin.
It's exceptionally hard to find anybody that even knows what lederhosen is, you know. I did end up at a costume shop where they were willing to rent me this rag that looked like it had been through, they drug it out of the dump for $65 for an evening.
I was like, yeah.
Really? Oh, well, no. I really had my heart set on buying a pair of lederhosen. So.
And you obsessed on this.
Yeah, I spent 9 hours looking for my costume, trying to put it together. I finally
You didn't start just that day. You were planning on this.
Right? Yeah, well, I was planning on going out and buying it here in town. Mm-hmm. If I'd really thought, I'd realized.
The lederhosen store had gone out of business a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, I hadn't done that research yet. to discover that. Otherwise, I would have bought it online, but I would have missed the party. So, you know, me being OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, I had to have this. I went to several costume shops, and they had wonderful costumes all over the place. I didn't even look at them, basically. I was just looking for my lederhosen.
And the more rejection and obstacles you got, the more you had to have it.
The more I had to have it, right, exactly. So I finally ended up, you know, putting together a pair of suspenders and maybe some Bavarian-looking ribbon.
You crafted
and,
your own lederhosen.
I did find a good hat.
Okay.
The hat makes
the
costume.
The little Tyrolean hat with the little feather?
Uh-huh. Okay. The hat makes the costume. So I did find a good hat, and I got a pair of knee-high socks and the boots and all that. So I put together an outfit. Looked pretty good. Get to the party at 9:30. It breaks up at 10:30.
Man.
So I spent 9 hours trying to get my costume. Finally get over there. It broke up. It's like, okay.
Man. So you were late, fashion more than fashionably late, because you were getting the final touches on your costume.
Right? Basically, I was throwing something together, you know.
Oh, man.
So it wasn't meant to happen. So next year, I'm going to put it on my calendar to buy lederhosen early.
Well, you can probably get them at the closeouts at the end of this month, right?
Could be.
Yeah, you never know.
I should.
You're fixed on that. But you also got to have the big beer stein to carry around.
Maybe some
you.
Of our... Well, I had that.
Okay.
That was part of my costume.
What was I thinking?
Maybe some of our listeners who know of a good outlet store for lederhosen can send me the address so I can buy them. And
if you have a lederhosen R Us in your town...
So I won't have this OCD episode next Halloween when it's time to costume up.
Man, yeah, that could be bad. Well, we've got a breaking news at the Big Foamy Head news desk. I'm sure everyone in the global audience is aware of the situation that we have here. The entire world is monitoring this. You know, we've had children falling down a well. We've had coal miner disasters. But this touches
the... This is big news.
This is huge. This is big. And the eyes of the nation are upon Memphis, waiting with bated breath to see... Will we find the manatee?
We had a wayward manatee swim up the Mississippi River, and it was seen in the harbor
of Mud Island.
Of Mud Island, right here in town.
And mileage wise, it was 700 miles off course. These things are from Florida and the West Indies, and this one somehow got way the hell lost and ended up here. I mean, this is a giant, like, the size of a boat.
I'm thinking he was on a bender.
Yeah.
He or she was on a bender.
Yeah. Got some fermented kelp or something.
Yeah.
And
hitting the bottle pretty hard. Yeah. Got lost, staggered his way up here and into the harbor, and said, damn, it's cold up here right now.
Yeah. All of a sudden, the antifreeze wore off.
Yeah.
But this thing has been here. It showed up. Yesterday? Was it yesterday I called you and told you about the manatee?
Yeah.
Or day before? And they have been watching this thing. There's already been two songs created about the manatee. And the SeaWorld folk came up. They're here. And we now, if you go to our local station's webpage, WMCstations.com, and they're not a shabby news outfit. On the front, God help us, is a up-to-the-minute manatee coverage. And we click through to watch. They have been posting bulletins every hour.
We're hoping by the time you hear the story that it's had a happy ending and you can say, wow, that manatee was released in the wild down in Florida where the dumb thing belongs.
So the SeaWorld people are here, but there's been a semi-tragic development. They can't find it.
It's lost.
And time is of the essence, it says, because the manatees, although they're huge, they don't have much fat. Who knew?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they don't have much of a fat layer because they're tropical animals.
Uh-huh.
And so in this water, and it's what, 50s?
It's kind of chilly out there.
It's getting cold. And so this thing, manatees are mammals, not amphibians, not reptiles. So they will get cold and, you know, it can kill the thing. So they're up here, and the SeaWorld people have been here all day, and they can't find the thing. It all of a sudden just swam somewhere else. It's the same color as the water, so it's hard to spot, and they're not sure where it is. So they're
hanging
out.
It could be up in Missouri by now.
Who knows? So they're out there looking for it, and, of course, we're going to keep an around-the-clock watch until we the manatee is safe and sound. That's our commitment.
That's right. Till it's found. Well, and rescued and taken back to Florida. I guess that's an 18-hour truck ride.
Yeah.
No, they brought up a boat, right?
They brought up a boat to go find it.
Oh. But they're going to stick it in a truck and haul it down to Florida.
Yeah, right? They said they've got a special truck with like a giant foam-lined sort of bathtub. Because it's a mammal, it doesn't have to stay in the water. It can breathe. I mean, it breathes air.
Yeah.
So they just throw it in the back of the truck and keep hosing it down. It'll be fine.
Well, they can take it to Destin, which is Memphis South.
Yeah.
We commonly refer to it, Destin, Florida.
Yeah, so they're going to take the thing back, steady it for a little while, then turn it loose. And hopefully our special manatee won't...
hopefully it's sobered up by then.
Yeah.
It won't be wandering north again.
Yeah. So that's all we got on the manatee. But
that's kind of funny.
Tune into your national news network. I'm sure it'll be on all of the major networks watching the manatee. So we got one more beer.
One more beverage. Mm-hmm. A very good one.
And I've got another artiste here, and this is a little interesting one. This is probably the second most famous known of the Sun artists, because not everybody knows Johnny Cash was a Sun artist. The Killer, Jerry Lee Lewis. Now, you know,
I have to confess I'm not a Jerry Lee Lewis fan.
Well, you know, he was a weird cat, and
he still is a weird cat.
Yeah, he still is. He's still alive, and he is the only one of everybody we've been playing that is still alive. And he had his share of stuff. Everybody's seen the movies and things like that. But and,
well, didn't he marry his cousin?
Yeah, yeah. So. A 13-year-old cousin.
Yeah,
yeah.
But get him young.
Yeah, raise him right. But he hated Elvis with a passion, and he was arrested. Showed up outside of Elvis's house with a gun.
Graceland?
Gonna cap his ass, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, he and Elvis didn't get along. And so this next song, when you listen to it, and you'll think, well, what happened? This is a song that was recorded in 1975, I think it is. It's Jerry Lee Lewis and Friends. Now, his newest album that he just released, Last Man Standing, subtitle, Jerry Lee Lewis and Friends, it's a series of duets with Jerry Lee Lewis, right? Mm-hmm. Well, on this one, he also did duets, but they didn't bother putting who he was singing with, unlike this new one, back in the 70s. But this guy... You listen to it and you'll say, oh, of course. And I guess they kissed and made up. So here's Jerry Lee Lewis and...
And Friends.
And Friends.
Well, Viva Luna, she's my baby. Viva Luna, tell me maybe. Viva Luna, she's my baby. The girl that wears the tight boot and jeans, she's the chick that knows everything. She's the girl that let me shake that thing. She ain't got no time Bebop-a-lula, she's my baby. Bebop-a-lula, I don't mean baby.
Bebop.
So did you figure out who the guest artist was?
Sure sound like Elvis.
It sure did. And there are people to this day that swear it's Elvis. Well, I did some research, and I thought I was one of them. Because remember, I told you, I said, look, I got this rare recording. It's Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis singing together. Well,
you learn stuff on Big Foamy Head.
Yes, you do. That's our commitment. That's the only reason we do this, to teach.
That's right.
To enlighten and broaden your horizon. Get you beer.
And drink beer, yeah, exactly.
So I looked into this because I swore it was Elvis. I've thought this for a couple of years since I've had this particular track. And as I looked into it, I started hearing about this person I had no idea existed. This guy's name was Jimmy Ellis. And he was hired at Sun Studios in around 1974. And they thought Jimmy Ellis was a bit of a dud name. But the reason they hired this guy is because they heard him playing and singing. And this guy had an eerie vocal resemblance to Elvis. Not just his singing, but the way he talked. And it was just his normal voice. I mean, it was like uncanny. And if you heard that, you could swear that was Elvis. Okay, remember we talked about the dumbass move where they sold the record catalog?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, by this time, Sam Phillips had, just like some of the other, like Stax and so forth, they'd kind of gotten on to hard times. Musical tastes were changing and so forth. He had sold the studio to this fellow whose name escapes me at the moment. And anyway, this guy was a bit of an entrepreneur, and he'd bought the catalog and whatever was remaining of it. Most of the rights to the rest of the records had been sold. Obviously, Elvis had. So he hires this guy who's like a dead ringer vocally for Elvis. They start producing records. Jerry Lee comes and does this thing, this duet deal. So they throw this guy out there, and sales go through the roof because they think, oh, it's a duet, you know, with Elvis. Well, it's not. RCA gets pissed, sends their lawyers down saying, we told you before, because he found some old master tapes. That wasn't considered, according to him, part of the deal. They were pissed. And then he had to produce Jimmy Ellis and said, look, this guy, and they made up a name for him called Orion, which somehow they figured out that means risen from the dead or born again or something like that. So what they did was they took this guy and they had him, after he did an album or two, they started putting together this Ellis or Orion Sings Elvis, because he was perfect for that. And their timing could not have been better. They put this album together in 76, 75, 76. And then in August, right, of 77, Elvis keels over dead.
Which we celebrate every year. Dead Week in Memphis is a big deal.
It's a very special holiday.
For a man who presumably overdosed in his bathroom.
Yeah, and fell off the throne, literally. But the guy, it's like all of a sudden Elvis is dead, and like a week later there's a tribute album by what could then officially be called the very first Elvis impersonator.
It's either cheesy or it's filling a need.
It was just weird timing.
Depending on what your perspective is.
But what they did with this guy, because he sounded just like Elvis, but I don't know what the guy actually looked like, they made him wear a mask. He dressed in jumpsuits. He did all these things, but of course he claimed, I'm not impersonating Elvis, I'm just being me. Well, that lasted for a little while, and then things went to hell, and, you know, the whole Elvis sound, you sound like Elvis, but Elvis is dead, or he's working at a Waffle House in Michigan. Just didn't do it anymore. So he kind of faded into obscurity, and he took what money he had left and opened a combination pawn shop and liquor store. And here about, I think it was...
That should be pretty popular in this area.
Yeah, a pawn and package store. And in 19, I don't have the dates in front of me, 97 or 98, this some crazy-ass redneck walks in, holds up the store with a shotgun. They didn't move fast enough. Blast him, blast his ex-wife, blast some other guy, kills him.
Mm.
The end to probably the absolute least known Sun recording artist who sounded like the most well-known Sun recording artist.
Well, Orion kind of sounds like a gay name.
It does.
If he's running around wearing a mask and capes and stuff.
But you got to remember now.
It's like, what's up with that?
In 1974, there were no such thing as gay people. They hadn't invented them yet.
That's right.
Yeah. They didn't exist. No, they didn't exist. They didn't invent gay people till the 80s. But
then it was fashionable.
Yeah, all of a sudden. So that was just a real weird sort of time, and that was kind of when Sun was really just hitting rock bottom, groping for anything. So there you go. And we got one more coming up, but we are now on a happier note.
Yeah, smooth segue back to beer. All right, this guy got killed in this pawn shop and package store, but
yeah,
we're drinking the chocolate porter. So this is from Bayhawk Ales again.
And this is the one you've been waiting on.
Yeah, and it's good. I've had a bottle of this two.
It's a tasty
for my personal
beverage.
Collection. And described as dark ruby, medium body. It's got dark chocolate and French roasted coffee aromas. The taste is chocolate and coffee.
Okay.
Original gravity, 1050. Alcohol by volume, 5.4. Hops, Pearl, Liberty, and Willamette.
Now, is that a low alcohol for a porter?
Yes, it is. It seems fairly low, 5.4 to me.
None of their beers are really high alcohol.
Well, not these.
Yeah. But
one of the things when you're at the Pilsner Room, they get awards of the yin-yang. I mean, you walk up the wall. The trip to the bathroom, they have all their awards on the walls. And
where else would you put them? the hall leading to the bathroom.
Well, it's also an upstairs area where they rent out for the swanky parties, you know.
Yeah. Complete with Bayhawk beer.
Yeah.
So is this one of the award winners, the chocolate porter?
My notes don't have that.
Well, it's good
but
stuff.
But I assume it is.
And what you just read off is pretty typical of porter description, chocolate and coffee, and they tend to go, some go more coffee, some go more chocolate. And so this one's definitely got a chocolate aftertaste to me. It's good. I don't get ruby. I don't see any kind of red tones. It's dark.
Two of the Bayhawk products, the chocolate porter and the California Pale Ale, are available in 22-ounce bottles, which this is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good size.
I also read on their website that they've got their gift packs available. So,
but you
anybody in the Southern California area, swing by.
Right.
Pilsner Room. It's on
far southwest, right? Huh? Or do you have to go there to get them, or do they sell them in stores?
Oh, I don't know. Go to the website. That's a better place.
Yeah.
Bayhawk Ales.
There you go. Tell them we sent you.
Yes, that's right.
I think you get 5% off.
No, you don't.
You could try it.
In you get to pay an extra 5%.
In the promotional code, BFHBR549. Make sure you write that down. But this is good. I think this is definitely, you were dead on, this is the best of the beers. And I think this is my favorite. And the honey, I kept calling it honey
don't
Weiss.
Call me honey. Honey Blonde.
Honey Blonde. That was good, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's
and their
Hefeweizen's
good, too. I'll vouch for that.
Okay. So, Bayhawk, they really excel at the more sweeter, flavorful.
Check them out. They may just be the greatest beer you never knew you drunk.
There you go. And I was checking the website again. Still no word on the manatee. The manatee is still lost. And they say, though, they have vowed, SeaWorld has vowed, they will continue the search through the weekend if necessary.
And Rick and Dick from Big Foamy Head are going to continue our vigil.
That's right.
Until the safety of this manatee is ensured.
That's right. And we're going to be selling commemorative manatee candles made from whale blubber, okay? Because we're particular about which animals we endanger. And, you know, be sure to buy yours today. They'll be online soon. And light a candle and pop the top on a cold one for Manny the manatee. Well, let's hope he returns home safely.
Well, that's it for content.
Okay, well, I got one more song, and this is going to close out.
Is this the song we were talking about?
Yeah, but you know what? We're going to have to drink a couple more beers, because this is one of those songs, you know, you've got certain songs, and one of these days we're going to do, I threaten to do this. We got to get some really serious high alcohol beer to do this. Drinking songs. This okay. is a classic drinking song. What Made Milwaukee Famous Made a Big Fool Out of Me, as interpreted.
Well, it's not the song that I thought it was then.
Well, it's interpreted by Jerry Lee Lewis.
Okay.
And so it's his take on, this is when he forgot his roots and he started getting a little more country. And so this is definitely a drinking song. So put this on pause, pound down a couple of shots, run around the block, and then play this. Okay, thanks. Note to staff. We were going to play this. Should I play this underneath?
I don't know. Yeah, okay. Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Well, this is just something I came across here. We're going to play like a couple of segments. Just listen to this. What you heard, this is from that same era, and I just came across this, and I thought, wow, this is just wow, because our metal friends from further up north, this is where it all came from. What you just heard, and you heard that whine, that feedback, what that was Link Ray, W-R-A-Y. That was from 1954, 55, the song Rumble. And, Rick, when you heard it, you said, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
On movies and stuff. That was a song that this guy, he'll never be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but all of the great musicians know this guy.
That's where it was on Streets of Fire, which is a classic movie.
Which we checked out, and it
was. Well, we couldn't.
But Link Wray invented the power chord. He is the father of heavy metal. That's the 50s. That song right there, which, yeah, you know, Biggie, instrumental, was banned all over the place, especially in New York City, because it promoted teenage violence, which I've yet to figure out how an instrumental incites you to do anything, because there's no directions. How do that? How do they know? How do they know?
Well, who knows?
Apparently, the kids in the 50s...
Well, they certainly had a lot of street gangs. I mean, you would see your West Side Stories and things like that.
Oh, yeah, I know. And the thing about... You
before
know, that's,
my time.
That's the thing about gangs today. They can't dance like the gangs back in the
West
50s,
Side Story,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And they don't sing at all.
The Sharks and the Jets.
Yeah, what's up with that? Okay, so enough about Link Wray. That was really cool. That was just like my aside. I thought, oh, look at this. Here's another note in rock history where stuff came from. And this guy, Link Wray, invented it, and that was a 1953 Gibson that he later traded in for some bizarre-ass microphone with a long or a guitar and mic setup that allegedly had the longest neck ever made on a guitar. I forget what it was, but that's where it's like this song, it wasn't enough power, and he just continued to define more and more power and so forth.
So he's the father of heavy metal.
He is. So all you
metal addicts out there, get down on the ground and worship him.
All you shows who claim to be metal, here you go.
Hail this guy.
You better let us school your ass right here. That's Link Wray. So we're going to close out. I hope the shots that we instructed you to take are kicking in by now.
That's right. You should be drunk.
Okay. And so enjoy a fine drinking song. From the killer Jerry Lee Lewis, What Made Milwaukee Famous Made a Big Fool Out of Me. And we'll see you next time.
Drive safe.
What's made Milwaukee famous sure made a loser out of me. Hell, it's late. Mama's waiting. Ought to get my ass on home. But every time I start to leave, they play one more Jerry Lee song. Somebody'll buy another round, and we'll ever drink lyrics are free. What's made Milwaukee famous sure made a fool out of me. You know, baby begged and begged and begged me not to go so many times before. She says love and happiness, it just don't live behind those swinging doors. Now she's gone, thank God. I finally see what's made Milwaukee famous has made a killer out of me. The old woman begged me not to go many times before. She says love and happiness can't live behind those honky-tonk doors. You're to blame, boy, not me. Too late you finally see what's made Milwaukee famous done made a loser out of you and me. I can look at a person and tell what he's thinking. Son, we'll make it back. I've seen him.